Ravacha breed the Rova, Mani lo mishmei, the Rabbi Ozer the Kula. So this goes back to the memory that was brought by Shmuel yesterday. Yisroel Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, who brings a machloket between Rabbi Yishmael and the Chachamim with regards to the nature of Gezeirah Shava. That Gezeirah Shava, how strong does the Gezeirah Shava have to be before it cannot be undermined by a logical argument? So we saw yesterday that Chachamim required be mufne mishnei tzadim. It has to be extraneous on both sides, the Gezeirah Shava, in order to be beyond the ability to question it logically. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel only requires that it be mufne mitzad echad, that only one of the two sides of the Gezeirah Shava be extraneous, in order for it to be unquestioned with regards to logical arguments. Yesterday, on that memra of Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel, we asked, well, according to Rabbi Yishmael, what's the difference between a Gezeirah Shava that has an extra word on one side versus a Gezeirah Shava that has extra words on both sides, since both of them ain meshivin. So the Gemara says that there is a qualitative difference, because if I'm faced with a choice between a Gezeirah Shava that has an extraneous word on one side versus a Gezeirah Shava that has words open on both sides, I'm going to pick the Gezeirah Shava that has extraneous words on both sides. Now, in this alternative reading, it's the Kula, which means the question is going to be on the Chachamim. The Chachamim who say that a Gezeirah Shava that has no extraneous words, and a Gezeirah Shava that has one extraneous word, over there the Chachamim say, Meshivin, you're allowed to ask logical arguments against that Gezeirah Shava. Well, if that's the case, it sounds like there is no difference between those two types of Gezeirot Shavot. And that's what the Gemara is going to address, and that's what it means, the Kula. Kol Gezeirah Shava, Sheinu Mufneh, Kol Ikar, L'Medim or Meshivim. Everybody agrees that if it's a Gezeirah Shava that involves no extraneous words, you can learn the Gezeirah Shava, Umeshivin. But you can't bring logical arguments against it. Mufne mitzad echad, if it has an extraneous word on one side, then the Rabbi Shmuel le'medim ve'ein meshivim, you can learn the Gezeirah Shava, and once you've learned the Gezeirah Shava, we don't look to undermine it with logical arguments. The Rabbanan le'medim u'meshivin. According to Rabbanan, you do learn the Gezeirah Shava, and you can still be meshiv, you can still make logical arguments against it. Mufne mishnei tzadin, if the words are extraneous on both sides, Divrei Hakol le'medim ve'ein meshivim. Everybody agrees at that point, you learn the Gezeirah Shava, and we do not ask logical arguments against it. As we're pointing out, we mentioned this yesterday, when it comes to a Gezeirah Shava, which you require a Misorah for, why would you be having logical arguments against it? It's what we mentioned yesterday, and Tosafot hints at it. The Gemara might know that there is a Gezeirah Shava. Or might even know there is a Gezeirah Shava, but not know what they're learning from it. And where the Gemara is trying to deduce or work out what exactly is the Gezeirah Shava or what the Misorah is, in that context, these rules become important. Or the Rabbanan, Ma'ika ben Mufne mitzad echad, l'she'en mufne kol ikar. So over here, that's what we said, l'kula, mani in the l'kula, is here, according to Rabbanan, what is the difference between a Gezeirah Shava without any extraneous words versus a Gezeirah Shava with one extraneous word? According to Rabbi Shmuel, we know there's a qualitative difference, because if it has no extraneous words, you can be meshiv. If it has one extraneous word, then ain meshivin. So that's a qualitative difference. But according to the Chachamim, according to the Rabbanan who say there is no difference between them, in both cases you are lomeid umeshivim and you're allowed to ask against them. So what is the nafkamina? Nafkamina echad mishkacha la mufne mitzad echad. It's a case where we have a choice between learning Gezeirah Shava where it's mufne mitzad echad, v'she'en mufne kol ikar, or the opposite choice is that it's not available at all. So in that case, where I have that choice, I will still say there is a qualitative difference between them. And we don't have logical arguments against either of them. So both Gezeirot Shavot could stand. Shavkina and She'en Mufne Kol Ikar, we're going to discard or disregard the Gezeirot Shava that has no extraneous words. Gamrina Mufne Mitzad Echad, and we will opt for learning from the Gezeirot Shava that has one extraneous word. V'halcha Mai Pircha Iko. What is the logical argument in our case against making the Gezeirah Shava? Mishum de'ika le'mifrach, because we can undermine it by saying, Mal Adam shekein mitamei mechayim. Adam becomes tamei for chayim, which is not true of any other Baal Chai. Any other living creature, when it's alive, does not convey tumah. When it's dead, it conveys tumah. Adam is unique in that while it's still alive, it can also contract and convey tumah. So that would undermine logically, any Gezeirah Shava you would make. And therefore, if I have a choice over here in our case, where you have a Gezeirah Shava between Tani'inim, Hagdolim, and Adam, where you only have one extraneous word, versus Gzeirah Shavah between Adam, Chaya, Behemah, and Oph, where I have two extraneous words. In the case where I have one extraneous word, Meshivin, I'm allowed to make logical arguments against such a Gzeirah Shavah. And here I do have a logical argument, which is, how can you learn from Adam to Taninim Agdolim? By Adam you have Tumami Chayim, by Taninim Agdolim you do not have that. Whereas, when it comes to Gzeirah Shavah, that is Mufne Mishnei Tzadim, like between Adam and Chaya Behemah V'Oph, over there, since Ein Meshivim, then the argument doesn't matter, and that Gzeirah Shavah will stand. And therefore here we'll opt for the Gzeirah Shavah between Adam and Chaya Behemah V'Oph versus the Gzeirah Shavah between Adam and the Taninim Hagdolim, and that underlies Rabbi Meir's opinion. B'chein, Amar Rabbi Chir Ba'ava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hainu Taimna de Rabbi Meir. So you have Rabbi Chir Ba'ava seconding Shmuel's suggestion here that the reason behind Rabbi Meir's position is, Hainu Taimna de Rabbi Meir, the whole B'nem Rabbo Yitzira Ke Adam. Because it has Yitzira Ke Adam, therefore that is the reason behind Rabbi Meir. Samalei Rabbi Ami, Elami Ato. If that's really the reason, I'm a Pelet Dmut Har, woman who miscarries, discharges something that looks like a mountain, imot me'alei da, she should be t'me'a delash, and emar, kine yotzer harim uvorei ruach. The term yitzira is also used by mountains. Samalei, har mi kapelet, when's the last time you saw a woman discharge a mountain? Evan he de kapelet. She's discharging a stone-like object that looks, or a part, would have been a part of a mountain. And that's not called a har. How gush yikrei. That's called a piece, a clod, some subsection of a har, but it's not called a har. What about ruach? Maybe there, refer to some empty sack, something that's not formed. Maybe you should have tumat leida. Hov v'nemra bo briyah ke adam. Because it has the term briyah used by like adam dichtibu vorei ruach. If you're going to say it's not available for Gzeirah Shavah, you could say that's not true. Why did it have to change the verb when it came to ruach? The fact that it added in a verb when it came to ruach and says yotzer harim, and then uchtiv vori ruach, and then added in vori ruach, shma mina lifnuye, it is available. Malay, danim divrei Torah, mi divrei Torah. Gzeirah Shavah is contained within the body of work in which you are involved with, that is, Divrei Torah. Within Torah, you can make Gzeirah Shavah. Vein danin Divrei Torah, mi Divrei Kabbalah. Can't learn out Gzeirah Shavah from the Torah to Divrei Kabbalah. Now, generally, when the Gemara does this, or the Gemara has something like this, it'll say that it's a Marei Makom rather than a Gzeirah Shavah. Which means that if we learn something from Navi that elucidates something in the Torah, the Gemara will say, well, until Yechezkel came along, how do we know this information? Or until Ezra came along, how do we know this information? So sometimes the Gemara says that we knew it, v'shachachum, they forgot it, and then they learned it again. Other times the Gemara will say, which makes more sense, is that it's Marei Mokom. The elucidation by the Navi is not coming until Me'a absolute limud from the Navi to the Torah, but rather, by seeing the definition or information in the Navi, it now enlightens our understanding of what is written in the Torah. It gives new meaning to the word that is written in the Torah. It's not that we're learning through Gzeirah Shavah, but over here, it's literally Gzeirah Shavah, because we're trying to learn out Yitzirah, or Briyah, to bring in Tumah. So over there, the Gemara will reject such an item. If we were trying to define the word Briyah, then it might be different. But over here, we're trying to really learn a full-fledged Gzeirah Shavah, and that you can't do between Torah and Divrei Kabbalah. Now we're going to have alternatives to Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah again says that when a woman is mapelet, chaya, beiman, of, she's tamei tumat leida. So far the first attempt by an Amora to explain Rabbi Meir's position was Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that says that it has to do with the fact that Yitzirah is written by Adam just like it's written by them. So now Rabbi Baruchan Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hainu Tamid Rabbi Meir, ho veinahem domot kashel Adam. They have similar eyes to human beings. Elamiato, if that's the case, Samapelet Dmut Nachash, Teimot Me'a Leida. Then same thing, if a woman gives birth to something that looks like a snake, the mother, the woman, should be Me'a Leida. Ho V'Galgalin O Agula Kishel Adam. It's a circular eye, like a human being. B'chei Teimot Hochanami, if you say Yoni Hochanami, yeah, okay. Litnei Nachash. Nachash should have been mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah. Itana Nachash, Had the Mishnah included Nachash or written Nachash, I would have thought that's the place where the Rabbanan disagree with the Rabbi Meir. Delokti be Yitzirah. So over there, there is no Yitzirah. Aval beimalik v'chayat lo pligei dechti be Yitzirah. Because maybe we would conclude, the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Meir when it comes to other beimot and chayot, because you have there the additional aspect, which is that you have this gezer shava yitzirah. So what's interesting here is that nachash is a subset of chaya. So what is the Gemara asking for here, that nachash should be enumerated separate from the word chaya in the Mishnah? If nachash is a subset of chaya, why does it have to be mentioned separately? So Tosafot says exactly what you just said, Shaul, is that Nachash was originally a chaya, because it says Vanachash ayaru mikol chayat asadeh. So it does define as a chaya, but after the arur, when it lost its legs, then shnikat zuragav lo mikre chaya stam el chayaru meset. Then it turns into a chayaru meset rather than a stam chaya. So its category, or it was a subset, changed when it was cursed and it lost its legs. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute, how could you suggest here that animals and humans have the same type of eyes? V'ha gabi mumim tanila. If you go to the Gemara in Bechorot, one of the mumim that we mentioned by an animal in Bechorot is etche galgalino agul kishel adam. When an animal has an eye like a human being, that is a mum in the behema. So how are you suggesting over here that animals and humans share this common feature, which is that they have the same type of eyes? Where it says, Lokasha, that's not a problem, it depends what you're speaking about. Ha ba'ukma, ha bitziria, or bitzihara. So the ukma part is the easy part, that's the pupil. Everybody has black round pupils, so that is a common factor that is shared between animals and human beings. What's different depends over here. Rashi claims that it's the eye socket that is different between human beings and animals. So the pupil, the center part of the eye, the black of the eye, is similar in being round and black. The eye socket is shaped differently between human beings and animals. And that's when the Gemara in Bechorot, or the Mishnah in Bechorot, says that if the animal has an eye like a human being, it's a mum, that's when its eye socket is shaped like a human eye socket, which is much rounder than the animal sockets, which are more elongated. So that's Rashi's explanation. You see over here on the side that the Rabbeinu Hananel says that it's tira, that it's adom asuvevet ashachor. It's the red that surrounds the white. I'm not exactly sure what he's speaking about. I would have thought he meant the white that surrounds the shachor that is different. I don't know if he's speaking about the red that is beyond the white that is exposed of the eye. There are others who want to say that it is white of the eye, which would make also sense that that's similar to what Rashi's saying, is that the socket is shaped differently, because the white of the eye, or the that which surrounds the pupil of the eye, that's shaped like the socket, not like the roundness of the pupil. That's the second attempt at explaining Rabbi Meir. Now we have a third attempt from an Amora to explain Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Anai Omer, I know time to Rabbi Meir, ho v'enem ho chot lifnehem kishel adam. Because the eyes of chaya, behema, and of are in front of the face, just like human beings, as opposed to fish and ramasim, shkatzim, where have their eyes on the side. So Mar says, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Variof, deinenav ochodofanav. Birds have their eyes on the side as well. They don't have them in front. And yet, they come Rabbi Meir, to Tamei. Rabbi Meir mentions in our Mishnah, chaya, beima, and ofot. Samra baye. Yes, by ofot, we're talking about vikaria vikipofa. Tell you about these birds, or the alternative girsa in the Aruch is Bekadja v'kipofa. Depending on which targum you look at, that is the targum of Kos and Yanshuf. These are types of owls that are mentioned in the birds that are Tmeim in the Torah. And so the Aruch says the girsa is Kadja kipofa, which is the targum of Kos and Yanshuf. Tosfos says that the targum of Kos v'Yanshuf is Karya v'kipofa. Either way, we're talking about some species of owls who do have their eyes in front. Ubsharfod, oh, you're gonna say by other birds it doesn't apply. We have a braita that seems to indicate otherwise. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer, or the alternative gear says Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Nirin Divir Rabbi Meir bebehema vechaya, Divir Chachamim beofot. That I think that Rabbi Meir is right when it comes to animals, and I think the Chachamim are right when it comes to ofot. My ofot. If you're going to say that a photo of here is defined just by karibikivu, my shnabi behema b'chaya, teinayim ofot lifnehem kishel adam, Kariya b'kipufa nami. If you're going to say, why would Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus or Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel suggest that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir when it comes to Hebeiman Chaya, and the halacha is like the Chachamim when it comes to a Kariya b'kipufa? There's nothing that distinguishes between them. If you think that the qualification, according to Rabbi Meir, is that their eyes in front, then Kariya b'kipufa qualifies. So why would he change the din there? Ela pshita b'sharofot Michlal, the Rabbi Meir, Palig, Bishar Ofot. That sounds like that the argument here is even with other birds, and from that you would infer that Rabbi Meir argues on all Ofot, not just Nkariya Bikubufa. But it says, no, Chasurei Mechsera. That Breita is actually missing some words in it. And this is the way the Breita should be read. Bechanina ben Antugunos, or Rabbi Chanina ben Gamlil Omer, Nirim div Rabbi Meir beimer v'chaya, Behu adin Nkariya Bikubufa. So that he includes Kariya Kipufa in that category of Chayam Beima. Aval Bishar Ofot, when it comes to the other Ofot, Tivei Chachamim makes sense by the Shar Ofot. Why? She'af Rabbi Meir lo nechla gimehem elo b'Kariya b'Kipufa. Because Rabbi Meir only argues by Kariya b'Kipufa. Aval Bishar Ofot modi lohu. So basically he's saying that I like Rabbi Meir's position, and Rabbi Meir's position by Shar Ofot is like that of the Chachamim. It says, "V'atanya, don't we have another brayta that says, Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok, Mapelet min b'chema v'chaya l'divrei Rabbi Meir v'lad, u l'divrei Chachamim einu v'lad." When it comes to the discharge of an animal from the woman, Rabbi Meir says that's a birth. The Chachamim say it's not a birth. V'ofot, either tibdok, which means one should go check it, or tibadek, it should be checked. So the man tibadek, according to whom should you check it? Lav the divrei Rabbi Meir. Isn't according to Rabbi Meir they need to check? Amar kariya v'kipofa in sharofot lo. I mean that according to Rabbi Meir, there's you distinguish between birds, and therefore you have to go check it out. So amar vacha brei ravika lo tibadek la rabbanan. You have to check it out according to the rabbanan. Damre kariya v'kipofa in sharofot lo. According to rabbanan, they also distinguish between kariya v'kipofa and other birds. Rabbanan say behemah chaya, not a leida. All other birds, not a leida. All of a sudden, these two are a birth. I mean, what is that? The answer is whole v'yishlam listot ki adam. They have cheeks that are similar to human cheeks, and therefore they are the only things that are qualified to be like a leida of a human being. We're gonna see a second that those. But yeah. I don't disagree with you. It's a forced reading of the Breita in order that it's not a proof that Rabbi Meir is like what Rabbi Yannai said. Alright, so by mine Rabbi Yirmei Mir Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Yirmei queried Rabbi Zeira. Li Rabbi Meir Damar Beim Bameisha Vlad Ma'al Yuhu. According to Rabbi Meir, who says that a animal or something shaped like an animal inside of a woman is considered to be a Vlad Ma'al Yuhu. Kibel Ba Avia Kiddushim Mahu. It's a female in there, and the father accepts kiddushin on behalf of this female, whatever it is inside of the mother. The mahu, what would be the din? It says the my nafkamina. Why is there any nafkamina over here? So he says tsurei bachota. That's to make him usher with a sister. A person cannot marry two sisters. That is bichayel. That's as long as she's alive. Can't marry two sisters when both sisters are alive. If one of the sisters passes away, then after the death of that sister that was the person's wife, they can marry the other sister. But that means that, or the implication from this is the memra dechaye, that this animal, this whatever fetus this woman's going to give birth to can survive. Rabbi Meir's position is not based on the fact that these fetuses can survive or are viable fetuses, but rather that in that category we have live animals. So animals who are born to animals survive. So yes, animals that are born to human beings are not viable fetuses. Nevertheless, since within that category, such a shaped fetus can survive, not from a human being, but from an animal, that's enough to make it a valid leida. So he came up with this wild case, and the wild case is obviously not true because it would imply that it's a viable fetus. And we know, according to Rabbi Meir, we're not talking about viable fetuses over here. So then why was Rabbi Yirmiyah asking such a question of Rabbi Zeira? So that's explained to us by Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Ad kan yivyu Rabbi Yirmiyah l'Rabbi Zeira l'day gichuch v'lo gachich. He was trying to get Rabbi Zeira to loosen up, to laugh, and have a little fun. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu was coming up with this crazy case to make Rabbi Zeira laugh or be humored by it. But Rabbi Zeira did not fall for it, and he was not humored by Rabbi Yirmiyahu's questioning. Why not? As Rashi points out, that schok, you're not allowed to be lighthearted, comical, full of laughter. That a person should not be full-fledged laughter, happiness, excitement, because that's inappropriate for a person who is both standing before Hashem, also post-Churban, all these reasons where a person shouldn't do this. And Rabbi Zeira, machmir tvei. Rabbi Zeira was very machmir on this, and therefore walked around with a very reserved demeanor, and he was not open to Rabbi Yirmiyahu's joking over here, or he didn't fall for his humor. Tosafot points out that there are other nafkaminot. Why are they just talking about kiddushin and achota? Other nafkaminot, first of all, is a person liable for murder if they murder such a fetus? Or is there a problem of eshedish with this fetus that is born, if it was viable? So here Tosafot says that's obvious to the Gemara, it's very interesting. Pshitalei deinachaya gimel shamnim, clear to the Gemara, this fetus will not be viable for 3 years. Therefore, it's not a bat biyah, and eshedish is not an issue. And it won't live a year. It's not even viable for a year. So therefore it's a treifa, and then murder will not be an issue. The only thing he says is the option could have been that maybe someone who is roveya, this would be bestiality with this fetus. Would that be a problem? Because that applies even to a treifa or to something that's not a bat bi'ah if it's classified as a behema. But he says, the Gemara was pretty clear that this fetus wasn't going to make it very far. It's just a question of kiddushin. If it's able to survive for a short period of time, maybe kiddushim has impact over here. And in the end, the Gemara says that's not the case because even Rabbi Meir agrees that there is no viability to these fetuses. So why was Rabbi Yirmiyahu querying? Is again to humor Rabbi Zeira, and he failed at it. And so it also points out over here that even though Rabbi Meir learns the Gzeir Shava of Yitzira, we still have to have the reason over here, umino mitzkayim, that even though he learns that gzeira shav, and that's what teaches us, it still has to give a reason why we would consider or classify such fetuses as being leidot, because they're not surviving. They're not viable fetuses. So he needs umino mitzkayim in addition to the gzeira shav to make sense out of the fact that it is a viable birth, because it has no human features over here. If it had some human features to it, then we could classify it as a leidah without it being mino mitkayen. But over here, we have no human features, and it's not a viable fetus. Why would you ever consider it a leidah, even with the gzeira shava? And the answer is, it would be mino mitkayen. There are times when such a fetus can be viable when it's inside of a behema. Okay, now, gufa, amr yud amarav, lo amr rabbi meir alohu, bimino mitkayem. Amr yirmiya midifti, af, ana namitanina. We also have a similar thing in the Mishnah. Hamapelet kimin behema chayav ba'of. If there is a discharge, a miscarriage of something that looks like behema chayav ba'of, then it is considered or classified as, according to Rabbi Meir, it is classified as a leida. With regards to Amapelet, Kamin Behema Chayav Oof, Divrei Rabbi Meir, Chachamim Ajei Bo Mitzurat Adam, similar to our mission over here, where the Chachamim say that he has to have a form, a human form to him. But Amapelet Sandal, Oshul Yau Shfir, Merukam, Yotzei Mechutach, so all of these items, whether it is a sandal is a human form that has been crushed or pressed down. Shilyam, we've seen before, is a placenta or an afterbirth, which is not that it's a vlad, but it's an indication of vlad. Shfir is or defuz vlad. It's a skin or some sort of sack that has the shape of a vlad. Mirukam, that it has some sort of form to it. It has some sense of where the evarim are. Vayotzei mechutach, or a fetus that's taken out piece by piece. In all of these cases, habach harav, any child that is born after that is b'chor l'nachala, v'enu b'chor l'kohen, it's not a b'chor l'kohen. So over here, we've done this before in b'chorot, there are different qualifications for b'chor l'kohen versus b'chor l'nachala. B'chor l'kohen is peter rechem, the first thing to exit through the rechem. So over here, in all these instances, you have something that exits the rechem, and that's poter the rechem. It's the first one to go through the rechem, and the one that comes after it, the viable fetus that comes after it, will not be a b'chor l'kohen. On the other hand, by b'chor l'nachala, it has to be a child or a fetus that is viable and survives for a certain duration in 30 days before the father connects with it, which is somebody or a fetus should dava libo acharav, that the father's heart is drawn after, so it has to be something that lasts for a certain amount of time and that is a viable being. So over here, all these discharges are considered to be leidot in terms of being poter, in terms of peter rechem for the Kohen. Rabbi Meir says, behema chayin of even. The Chachamim obviously say that it needs to have a tzurat adam. And then we have these other items of sandal, shalyash, shfir merukam, yotze mechutach, which are all considered to be leidot for peter rechem, but not for nachla. V'i sal kadat chodechaye. If you think that these fetuses that Rabbi Meir is talking about are viable, then how could it be that the subsequent fetus that is born would be a bechor lenachala? Because if they live, then it's not only petarechem, it should also be a bechor lenachala. Yet, Rabbi Meir is saying over here, behema chai ve'of, is only poter petarechem, in terms of the next fetus being born, will not be a bechor lekoein, but he will be a bechor lenachala. Merova lo'olam techaye. There's no proof in that Mishnah. Maybe it is a viable fetus. Vishani otam damarka reshit ono. Mi shilibo dove alav. That has to be his first strength. First strength means something that the father is drawn after, that he attaches to emotionally. That here it's something that the father's heart will not be drawn after. Meaning that's leiv aviv mitabela moto. Father will be distraught over such a fetus dying or passing away. And over here, obviously, because of the nature of what's being born here, a father is not going to be drawn after such an item. So even according to Rabbi Meir, even if you think it is a viable entity, you could still say that the Mishnah Bechorot says it's not a Bechor le'nachala. So we have no proof from the Mishnah Bechorot to what we are learning in the Brayta over here, that Rabbi Meir believes that these entities are not viable. So b'yimei Ravad Rabbi Me'abayi, le Rabbi Meir, damar be'ma b'mei isha v'lad mal yehu. Adam b'mei be'ma, mai. What about a human form inside of an animal? B'mai nafkamino. What's the difference? Lishtirue be'achilo. In order to make it mutar be'achila. Tishalei me'ad Rabbi Yochanan. You can answer it from Rabbi Yochanan. Dam Rabbi Yochanan shukhete de'be'ma matzava d'mut yonah. Someone who shechs an animal and then opens up the animal and then there's a fetus that looks like a bird inside of it that looks like a yonah. Asura be'achila. Well, you can't eat it. It says, how can you compare the cases? By a bird is not even in the realm of the behemah. So therefore, when you check the animal, and then inside the animal you find a bird, the bird is not a mafresed parsa, it's not even a parsa, it's not even parsot, it's nothing that is similar to a behemah. Hacha, by a human being, he did parsot leka, doesn't have two heels, it doesn't have a split hoof, parsa miyaika, but it does have feet, it does have something that looks like a behemah, and therefore could be qualified as a mafresed parsa. And even according to Rabbi Shimon, who argues on the Chachamim and says that a kalut ben para, if you have a animal that is non-split hoofed, born to a split hoofed animal, it's not kosher, you can't eat it. Chachamim argue and say that it is kosher to eat. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees if you shech the animal and find it inside of the behema, that is kosher. Finding a non-split hoofed animal inside of the behema, then you could eat it even according to Rabbi Shimon. So the same will be true here. If you have a human form inside, it has the equivalent of a parsa inside of it. So therefore maybe it qualifies to be eaten if it's considered to be a real fetus of the behema. It's considered to be an extension of the behema. Not like an oaf. An oaf, which is considered to be a totally separate category when you shech the behema, it has no impact on the oaf that's right inside of it. So where is Adam in that picture? So over here you wanted to prove something from oaf, from Rabbi Yochanan, there you have no proof because an Adam is different than an oaf. And an Adam is much more similar to what we call a kalut, something that is non-split hoofed behema that is found inside of another behema. Alright, so now in the Mishnah the Chachamim say, Kol she'ein bo mitzurat ha'adam, it's not called a leida. So Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Bava, Amar Rav, Hakol modim, everybody agrees, Gufo tayish, if the body is like a goat, Upanav adam, and its face is human features, adam, that's qualified or classified as an adam. Gufo adam, if the body is human-like features, Upanav tayish, but the face is like a goat, V'lo klum, that's nothing. Lo nechluku, where's the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir? So everybody agrees, if its facial features are that of a human being, then that is classified as a leida, even according to the Chachamim. It has mitzurat adam. On the other hand, if it has human features in its body, but its face is a goat features, over there, even Rabbi Meir agrees that that's not considered to be a leida. But nechukku, their makloka revolves around elishpanava dam v'divre ba'ayin achat kibeima. That its facial features are human, but it has some animal-like features, like one eye is like a beima. Shubeime omer mitzurat adam. Since it has some human features to it, that's enough to be classified as a leida. You have to have all the features be human-like. And if all the features are not human-like, then it's not classified as a leida. And even though, we know before, Rabbi Meir in our mission says if you have a birth that looks like a behema chayin of, that's considered to be a full-fledged leida. Over here, by human beings, Rabbi Meir is going to say, if it's a human, then it's going to have the features of a human. Whether it's mitzat or a call to the features of a human being, it's got to have full-featured human being. But if it's a behema chayin of, fine, that's also a leida. If it is a behema chayin of, but if it's a mix between them, then that may not be classified as a leida. So Amar lo the Rabbi Meir ba'avo v'ha ipchotanyo. Don't we have a bright that says just the opposite of what you are saying? Rabbi Meir omer kol tzurat, v'chachamim omerim mitzurat. So that would be the opposite of how Rabbi Meir is defining it. So the difficulty here is what is meant in the Braita, and what is the question on the previous Memra. Before we had a Memra, which is Amarav Amarav, and now we have a Braita that says just the opposite. Rabbi Meir says Kol Tzurat, and Chachamim Omerim Mitzurat. So the simplest way to read this is that this is exactly the opposite of what we saw before. Before, when you said Tzurat Adam, that means it has to be entirely of human features, and Mitzurat Adam means that it has to have partial human features. Now here in this Braita, Rabbi Meir seems to be saying the opposite. Now Rashi goes out of his way to say, no, wait a minute. It's not exactly the opposite here. And that when we say kol tzurat over here, it means kol shehu tzurat adam shebo abivlad. As long as it has some feature that is human-like, that's considered to be a vlad. Even if its whole features, its facial features are a goat, but it has an eye-like or some other feature like a human being, that's enough. And the Chachamim would say, mitzurat, acheibo mitzat tzurat nikeret. That's to have human-like qualities that are distinguishable over here. So what Rashi says is when the Braita says the opposite, he does not define the words the same as he did in the previous case. The previous case, he says, when Rabbi Meir means mitzurat adam, it means that at least half of it is human-like. And Chachamim say, no, it has to have kol tzurat adam. It has to be entirely human-like. That's what we had from Rav. And then you have a Braita where the Gemara says, the Braita says the opposite. And it uses the same terminology, or actually defines the terminology differently in this case. And when he says mitzurat, according to Rabbi Meir, means one feature. And when it says kol tzurat, it doesn't mean all the features, it just means that visible number of features already make it human-like in quality. So Tosfot doesn't like that switch. And he says, near the first, Tanya ipcho mamash, that the Braita is exactly opposite what Rav said before. And therefore, when it says kula, that is everything. So Rabbi Meir says that you need all the tzurah to be similar. And that's what it means, yitzirah k'tiv. Yitzirah means the full yitzirah has to be similar to whatever item it is. Whether it's human, whether it's animal, it's just got to have all the features. And Rabbi didn't say mitzurat. It only has to have chatzit tzurah. As long as it has something that looks like or is visibly like a human being, that's enough. The problem that you have here is now you have a memra of Rav, and you have a braita that is the opposite of what Rav says. And then Amar Lahu, so Rabbi Yirmiyah responds to them, Itanya, Tanya, you have a braita, that's fine. That's the braita, you go with the braita. I have a mesura from Rav. But how could you have Rav arguing on a braita? Rav is an Amora, and you have a braita saying that the opposite. So that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, Rav tono poliku. Rav is a Tana, and he argues over here. The problem with that explanation, this is why Tosafot doesn't love the explanation, is that in a second we're going to have a memra from Rabbi Yochanan that also seems to go against the Braita. Rabbi Yochanan is also an Amora, and we don't say Rabbi Yochanan Tana Hu Palik. Rashi comes up with this odd way of explaining the Braita because he wants to maintain the fact that Rabbi Meir is more Mekel than the Chachamim. So in order to do that, even in the reverse Lashon of the Braita, he creates a way that Rabbi Meir is still saying something that is less than what the Chachamim are saying. And then when it comes to the statement of Rabbi Yirmiyah in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which seems to accord with the explanation of the Rabbanan's position in Rav, he says, Rav Tanu Polig, and therefore he argues on this explanation of the Braita. Whereas Tosafot already explained earlier that even though Rabbi Meir's Mekel, the Gabe, a Leida,
meaning that achaya, of behema are classified as a leida. Nevertheless, he might be machmir over here with regards to human qualities. He's saying, if it's achaya, of behema, that's a leida. If it's a human being, that's a leida. But you have something that's a mix, then I need some sort of determination to make sure that it's one of the two. And therefore, even Rabbi Meir might have a demand for a kol tzurat panav to be of an adam, or mixat tzurat panav. Whatever it is that he demands, it might be a threshold that is more machmir than chachamim, even though he's more mekil with the gabe, what is classified as a leida.
So that for that reason, Rashi has to come up with this strange explanation that the words that are used by Rav and the word by Braita, which are exactly the same, are defined differently. The Tosfot says, no, I think the words are defined the same. Ah, what about the fact now that I have a Braita going directly against Rav? There's no problem. The Rach, the Rabbeinu Chananel's Girsa was this. Goris v'divrei Rav, Rabbi Meir Omer, and Chachamim Omrim. It's not a member from Rav that's saying this, but rather it's Rav quoting a Braita. It's not Shir Rabbi Meir Omer and Chachamim Omrim, but rather Rabbi Meir Omer and Chachamim Omrim, which would be a direct quote rather than an inference from what they say. And so therefore, Rav's position would then be a Tanaya quote, and therefore when you have a Braita against it, we wouldn't have a problem. Tosfot solves the problem by saying Rav is actually quoting a Tanaic work, and therefore he doesn't have to mess around with the Braita. Whereas Rashi says that Rav is a Memra, Rav Tanahu Pulig. So I'm Rabbi Rav, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Metzach, Vagvinim, Ve'enayim, Ve'alistot, Ve'gabot HaZakan, Ad Shir Kulam Ke'echad. Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Yochanan, in order for you to be classified as an entity, you have to have the forehead, the eyebrows, the eyes, the cheeks, and the chin. All of them have to be of the same nature. I mean, they all have to have human features to them to be classified as a human being. Rava Amar Chasso. Rava quotes the name of Chasso. Metzach, Agaben, Ha'ayin, Valeset, Gabot HaZakan, Ach Kiyukulam Ke'achat. So here, the difference between Rava and Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yochanan is whether it's in the singular or in the plural. In the first case, everything's written in the plural. You need both of them to have features like a human being. Over here, Metzach means the forehead, then the Gaban is one eyebrow, one eye, one cheek, and the chin all have to have human features. V'lo plige, they don't argue. Hakaman damar kol tzurat, hakaman damar mit tzurat. Depends what your demand is over here. Is the demand here that all the features be human-like, or is it only part of the features here be human-like? But this goes back to then the explanation, the original way Rashi explains the way Rav's memra was, versus the explanation that he gave in the Braita. So meitev, tzurat panim shamru, afilu partzuf echad min ha-putzufim. That when we said that the tzurat panim has to be human-like, it means even one facial feature out of all the facial features. Chutz min ha-ozen, except for ears. Ears don't qualify, has to be of the features that we mentioned. The memra, the mechad namisagi, that one's enough. Here we're at least demanding half, if not all, of the features. Where did you come up saying one human feature is enough? That it's according to the one who says that you need all features, be a human being. So Klomar, Rashi said, Surat panim shamru chachamim demakvim, afilu eiver achad kebeima makva. So what the Abaye says, Kitanya la kev tanyo. That's coming to teach you what's problematic. It's not telling you one feature is enough to make it that it is a tzurat adam, but rather one feature that is not like an adam is enough to ruin it. To command adam are called tzurat, according to the chachamim, who say that you need the entire features to be human-like. According to one who says that you need partial features to be human-like. Umay echad, echad echad. Doesn't mean one, it means one of each feature has to be human-like. And therefore it means half of the features have to be human-like. Right, Amar Rava, Nivra Bayin Achat, Ubi Yerach Echad, Minatzad, Imot Mea. A person, Chas Hashem, is born with one eye, one leg. Then, if it's in the normal position of where you would find a leg and an eye, then it's a Leida, because he's just missing the other Evarim, but he has one of them. Be'emtza, if the leg is centered, or the eye is centered, then she's Torah, because then it's not a human being, it's something that's totally different. Amar Rava, Veshto Nakuf, if the esophagus is punctured, Imot Me'a. Veshto Atum, if the esophagus is plugged up, then Imot Torah. Right, Veshto Nakuf is a trefa, and Veshto Satum is also, obviously, a trefa, can't swallow, can't eat. So what's the difference between them? So we'll see in a second. Tanu Rabbanan, Amar Pelet Guf Atum, Ein Imot Me'a. Someone who gives birth to a guf atum. Atum here means, usually atum means blocked up. But blocked up over here, guf atum means it's shapeless in a sense. Then any mot me'a leidav, ezu guf atum. Rabbi omer kedeshi netel menachai via mot. Tanakh, if you remove from the body that feature and it would die, v'kama yitayo min achay v'yamot, and what is that? Zake omer adar kova. All the way up to, which is usually the knee or above the knee area. Rabbi Yani omer ad nikavav, all the way up to the area of the hips. Rabbi Yochanan omer mishum Rabbi Yosef Yeshua ad makom tiburo, until the belly button area. So ben Rabbi Zakkai the Rabbi Yanai, the difference or the nafkamina between Rabbi Zakkai and Rabbi Yanai is ika benayu trefa chaya, whether trefa is viable or not. Meaning that in both of those cases you're a trefa. Cut above the knee makes someone into a trefa. A cut up to the hips is also a trefa. The question is, does a trefa live? Is a trefa a viable entity? So according to Rabbi Zakkai, a trefa is not chaya. So therefore, if the cut's already above the knee, you're over. That's not a leda anymore because it's not a viable entity. On the other hand, Rabbi Yanai says, trefa chaya. Okay, it's not going to live a long time, but it still is a viable entity. It will be born and be able to live for a short period of time. Therefore, it requires a severing up to the hip area. Up to the hip area, you're already qualified and classified as a nevela. That's not even a trefa anymore. That's something that has no viability to it. Mar sabar trefa chaya, mar sabar trefa ena chaya. But then, Rabbi Yana, the Rabbi Yochanan, he can be now. But then, what's the difference between Rabbi Yana and Rabbi Yochanan? What's the difference between until the hips, until the belly button? So the difference between them is Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, we saw back in Chulin, Damar Rabbi Elazar, Yital Yerech v'chalau shalai nevela. If a Yerech, the entire leg is taken out, the thigh area is taken out, including the socket in which the thigh is placed, then it is a nevela. How do you test for that? The Gemara in Chulin says that when the animal crouches down, it's still visible. The missing limb is visible. You can see that the socket is empty over there. He classifies that as a nevela, which he calls a walking dead animal. If an animal has such a feature missing, then it is nevela on the spot. Even if it's alive, it's considered a nevela. It's dead on the spot. So therefore, Rabbi Yanai says, if you cut up that high to the Yerech, that's a nevela already. There's nothing to talk about. Even if it's alive, it's dead. It's a nevela. Rabbi Yochanan does not subscribe to that position of Rabbi Elazar, and therefore he requires atiburo to make sure that we're talking about something that is not viable over here at all. That's what Rabbi says about this animal. Now you go back to Rova. Now Rova's explanation of Veshet Nakuv is a trefa. Veshet Atum is not a trefa, it's not viable at all. So the difference between those two memorot in Rova is that if the Veshet's Nakuv and it's a trefa, if a trefa is chaya, then it's okay. That's enough. It's a birth. Whereas if it's Atum, it's not even a viable entity whatsoever. And that'll be the difference between them. So Rova will say trefa chaya, and that's how we explain his position over there. Okay, we'll stop here.